The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this April 27th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a gorgeous Monday here in the Auburn Opelika area and the final Monday of April. How about that? May 1 is this Friday, so I don't know where the month of April went. It felt like yesterday we were making April Fool's jokes and giving you my yearly update that I hate that holiday because it's a fake holiday, and so April has almost come and gone, but what a Monday it's going to be. So much to get through on today's show. National news, Auburn recruiting news for football, baseball news as well, and our usual Monday 3:30 guest in Jacob Hillman. All that here and more on the show today. Christian, happy Monday to you, sir. Again, happy final Monday of April.
Yeah, final Monday and finals Monday for all those that are listening on the university side of things.
I do not miss that.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I forgot exactly which account posted it, but talked about, we went out and handed out donuts for all the 8 a.m. finals, and it was like, holy cow.
Yeah, I don't miss those days.
There's a lot of things I miss about college, but that not being
ours were a lot more projects and things too.
Yes,
just
very
being
much
in
so.
the journalism side of things, where it was final projects and speeches and projects basically.
I think at Auburn I took one written final, like I had to use a pen and pencil or pen and paper and fill out A, B, C, D.
Do you have to go by the blue sheet at the library, or not the library, at the bookstore?
Scantron type of thing. I think I did. Otherwise, it was very much either, thankfully, grades-wise helped out a little bit. But
shout out Rick Smith. He was the only one I ever had to buy a blue sheet for, and they were 50 cents a pop. And
that hurt as a college student.
I mean, there was always two or three people that wouldn't buy one who would then have to run from we were having class at RBD at the library, who would then have to run to the bookstore, buy one for 50 cents, and come back.
Walk into class. Oh, crap.
Yep. I bought like four at the start of the year and just kept them in my backpack.
Talk about supply and demand. You could have bought those for 50 cents and just
sold
walked
it
around
for
the
five
class.
Bucks.
Hey.
Could be.
You don't want to run back.
Mass media law. That was the class that I remember taking an actual written test.
Now you can ride those scooters a mile and pay $8 for them.
Yeah, those were not a thing. Only the athletes had those when we were in school.
Very, very much so.
I forgot it was finals week. How about that? Good luck to everybody taking finals.
Yeah.
Couldn't be me.
No. Very, very happy that I am no longer in that conversation. But speaking of Auburn conversations, man, we thought that the news was going to be dominated by all of Auburn here this afternoon, and it primarily will be. But we kind of sat back and was like, okay, what is the big power news this weekend that we need to start the show with? And it was like, okay, is it on the Auburn side of things with Auburn baseball? Is it the football side of things with their recruit and with the NFL draft? Is it basketball and kind of having another conversation, another kind of a storyline on what the focus could be, on what the roster looks like, and having multiple different spots to fill out? And then about 1 o'clock hit, and it was like, oh, okay, well, let's push everything down in our rundown here in just a little bit, because we got college football quarterback news that doesn't really involve Auburn and doesn't really involve the talents on the field.
Thank you, Brendan Sorsby, who is taking the college football world by storm today, not because of the $5 million he got paid from Texas Tech. That's old news, man. We've already reacted to that months ago, right? No. Brendan Sorsby, his eligibility is now in question. And that was the headline to start. And it was like, oh, no. Like, what happened, right? Texas Tech's $5 million quarterback now has eligibility issues. But why? And then the news started coming out, and there's been more, and there's been more, and there's been more. Phone lines are open today. If you want to be a part of this conversation, I'm sure somebody does. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390 is the call-in number, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067, where Brendan Sorsby, Texas Tech's new $5 million toy, has stepped away from the program, has been admitted to a gambling help facility, because it has been reported and now found he's taking a leave of absence from the football program because of a gambling addiction. They found in his past that he was betting on games during his time at Indiana. Okay, people forget he was a redshirt at Indiana back in 2022. It is found that he was betting on games, football, professional baseball, and he was betting a lot. And now the NCAA is like, knock, knock, we're here. You thought you got away with it. You thought we wouldn't find it. And in true NCAA fashion, it took them 4 years to do so, but they did find it. And so, man, this is huge news.
Yeah.
I mean, this is bad news bears for Texas Tech, for Brendan Sorsby, for the NCAA, for college football. I mean, man, this is bad news right here that one of the biggest names in the country has been caught betting on games. It is said that he is confirmed that he placed bets on Indiana while he was on their roster in 2022. Good news for him, and about the only piece of good news, is the games that he bet on while he was at Indiana in 2022, he did not appear in those games.
Yeah, only appeared in one game as a true freshman, you mentioned it. About the only true piece of positivity to come out of this, if there is one, Texas Tech released their official statement saying the university is committed to supporting Brendan through his recovery process and to ensure his long-term health and well-being. And not only, again, was this on the football side of things, this was professional sports as well. And this brings back, man, something we talked about, was this over the summer last year on the NCAA voting to approve where college sports and college administrators could go and bet on pro sports? And then finally, it was the big NBA poker run that finally the NCAA was like, oh, okay, maybe we should back this down. And, of course, those happened like 3 days with one another.
Yeah.
The fact of, man, if this got approved, it would have been released. But, oh, cool. He bet on professional sports. And so I guess we'll do a little bit of a hand slap on the college side of things. But this is what it could have been all the way around. And thankfully it's not. But unfortunately for Sorsby, yeah, I mean, having pitch bets on this next pitch being a ball, this next pitch being a strike, and not that any of those were upwards of anything crazy, but thousands of those happening throughout weeks and months is a very serious matter that you feel like it's grown in legitimacy and it's grown in its art of trying to stop things. Yet, man, I mean, we've talked about it off air and on air about the betting world and the betting side of things and how, man, every single commercial when you watch games, every single, I mean, you're sitting there watching on a 2-1 count. It shows the odds on a baseball game of, okay, what's his odds to see a fifth pitch in the at-bat? I mean, it's everywhere you go.
Right.
And now with these kids, and obviously this was a couple years ago, but NIL was still a thing, you're now giving players open freedom and open amounts of money that risk even more of these stories coming out.
And the problem here, with, again, talking the Brendan Sorsby news that has been breaking over the last hour or so, is you mentioned the NCAA passing that rule that college athletes and coaches could bet on pro sports. Reminder, that only was in place for like a month, and then most of the D1 schools voted to reverse it, and they did, right? But we're talking years ago before that even was a thing. The problem here with Brendan Sorsby is now there's confirmation, right, that I mentioned he was betting on Indiana games while he was at Indiana. Then, when he transferred to Cincinnati, he was betting on pro sports at that time. There hasn't been anything come out that he was betting on Cincinnati games when he was actually the starting quarterback and things, but
yet it took them an hour to find the Major League Baseball stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so he was attending Cincinnati Reds baseball games at Great American Ballpark and was, yeah, live betting on pitch by pitch. Wasn't betting a ton, but that's not the point, right? This is bad, man. And here's why it's bad. Here's why his eligibility is in question. Wilson Alexander from On3 reminds everybody in a perfectly executed tweet. Says that Brendan Sorsby's eligibility is in jeopardy with him under the NCAA investigation. NCAA guidelines state players who, quote, wager on their own games can face permanent loss of eligibility. Now, there's a whole bunch of rules in there, a whole big rundown on everything, okay? But the idea is he was on a team and was betting on his own team. The NCAA has to decide and go through their own rule book and decide, does that count? He didn't bet on a game he appeared in, is what they've discovered. So that saves him a little bit, but any sort of influence towards you or others who were betting on things like this because you had insider information, because you were on the roster, right? Those are things the NCAA and a judge will look at and say, nah, something doesn't. This doesn't pass the smell test for me.
No, and that tweet only reads Rule 1. You go read the Pete Thamel article on ESPN talking about the gambling addiction program and kind of the entire timeline of this. He also mentions it was an NCAA guideline that came out in 2023, the official quote saying student athletes who wager on their own games or on other sports at their own school face, quote, permanent loss of college or collegiate eligibility in all sports. And then it goes on to say other potential gambling punishment guidelines include if a college football player, for example, bets on a different school in their own sports, the loss of 50% of one season of eligibility will also be considered. And so by no means is this just something that you're going to slap the wrist at. And I don't know if this was something that Texas Tech and Sorsby had a conversation with and realized, okay, let's go ahead and out ourselves to try and minimize punishments. I mean, not that I'm sure that's not the main reason, but maybe that's something that helps. Maybe that's something that, okay, we made it a matter of our own hands rather than the NCAA getting involved, because you usually see the punishments being a little bit less. And in stories like that, this is a scary deal, not only for Texas Tech, not only for Brendan Sorsby, but for the longevity of what NIL is going to be, how it's being able to be paid out, how it's going to be used. I mean, you continue reading in this paragraph says the guidelines in 2023 include guidance that wagers greater than $100 would lead to 30% of a loss of eligibility throughout the season. For cumulative wagering greatly exceeding $100 or $800, the staff is directly considered to whether or not additional loss of eligibility, including permanent ineligibility, is appropriate in the matter.
There's so many different ways to discuss this. I mean, there's three different parts of this conversation. A, what does the NCAA do? B, what does Texas Tech do? And C, what does Brendan Sorsby do? We know that Brendan Sorsby is entering a 30-day gambling rehab facility, which I, not knowing the full in-house details, that seems excessive. Maybe that's Texas Tech's way of covering their own rear end,
right,
would be my guess.
That's the, we're going to take matters into our own hands and make it more extreme than it needs to be in hopes that whatever punishment is occurring. It'll be a little, it's always the parents. If you tell me the truth, you'll be in a lot less trouble than if you lie to me now and I find
that
out the truth.
That screams
later.
To me, though, that he still has a gambling problem.
That's what you're saying. Screams. Rather than it being, this was a 3 or 4 year ago type deal.
Yeah.
This is 100%.
I mean, because the news that we have is he was placing bets in 22 and 23 or 24, right? We're talking several years ago. Addictions are a real thing. Doesn't matter what you're talking about, and everybody has it differently, and everybody treats it differently, and everybody can have that re-sparked differently, right? I don't want to sound ignorant on that fact, but why is he going into a gambling addiction treatment unless he were still having gambling problems, which, again, he was betting on games when he was at Cincinnati. He was betting on baseball games, but he was still betting. Right? And so I do think that's a move from Texas Tech, yes, to cover their own rear end, but maybe he felt it was necessary too. I don't know. We don't have those details in particular, but something else that a Cincinnati reporter put out is Brendan Sorsby and his legal team, this is from Justin Williams, who covers UC, says they filed a motion to dismiss today in the lawsuit from the University of Cincinnati that they have against Brendan Sorsby. You remember that? They're suing him for $1 million in liquidation losses because of him leaving, right? They're trying to get that dismissed. So he's already being sued by Cincinnati for $1 million, and now he's under investigation by the NCAA. I'll say it this way. I'm sure there will be more news and details to come out about this.
100%. As the hours go on.
But whatever say that the NCAA has in this, on top of the legality part of a judge, this is an opportunity for them to make a major statement. This is an opportunity for them to draw a line and say, this is how things are going to be on the gambling side of college athletes, college coaches, whatever the case may be. You make an example out of a dude who was the hottest commodity in the transfer portal, just signed a $5 million deal to be a one-year starter at Texas Tech. Yeah, that punishes Texas Tech. That punishes the team. Hell, I'm sure Cincinnati, UC, is going to be involved in this somehow, too. They've refused to make a comment today. The NCAA and whatever judge is a part of this has a real opportunity to make an example of this, which would send shockwaves, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it would send the fear of, holy cow, this is a legitimate thing, and this is what my punishment or your punishment could be. We've had this discussion in so many different situations, and eligibility being one of them, and so many others on, okay, there's got to be a guinea pig. And yes, is it going to hurt somebody to start with? Yes. With eligibility, it was, okay, could this maybe hurt the upcoming senior class or whatever the case may be? Yes. But it's better for the longevity of not only the game, but of everybody that participates in it. What a statement it could be, for better or for worse, on the Sorsby side of things. But you're going to see the ripple effect. You mentioned it. Work its way down into just about every aspect of the game imaginable.
Yeah, big news. Again, Brendan Sorsby, the $5 million quarterback signed by Texas Tech in the transfer portal this offseason, has taken a leave of absence from the football program, has entered a betting/gambling rehab facility, and is currently under investigation by the NCAA on his eligibility for the upcoming season because of games that he bet on while he was at Indiana in 2022 and professional baseball games he bet on while he was at the University of Cincinnati.
One crazy thing that I'm reading about with the New York Times and The Athletic that posted this just a couple of minutes ago says that Sorsby only has 1 year of eligibility remaining. If he returns to football but is ruled ineligible by the NCAA, he could choose to enter the NFL supplemental draft, which typically takes place in July or August. And former Ohio State quarterback Terrell Pryor was selected in the 2011 supplemental draft after facing a suspension by the NCAA over the Ohio State tattoo memorabilia scandal.
Oh, yeah.
So How wild could that be? After all of that, Sorsby just goes, all right, you know what? I'll just go ahead and enter my name.
I mean,
I don't want to face the punishments.
Even if it's not a supplemental draft, he could just go as an undrafted,
sure,
sign as an undrafted free agent, right?
It's wild.
Yeah, And then again, Texas Tech, what do they do if he is no longer eligible, right? They got to get that money back. And you better hope that their legal team had something written in their contract, as they hopefully do with every NIL kid, if something happens or you lose your eligibility, if you're unable to compete in the upcoming season, we owe you nothing and you owe us whatever we paid you.
Right.
On top of him, again, being sued by UC for $1 million in liquidation losses.
It's like the head coach is being fired for cause, right?
Yeah.
There's something in that contract of, okay, well, not the fact that we just didn't see you fit and we wanted to move on. There's a reason why. That's what you hope that Cincinnati has. If only there were clear contracts that showed it all.
Yeah, man. How are some of those teams feeling that were in the Brendan Sorsby campaign or in the Brendan Sorsby sweepstakes,
yeah,
who didn't get him and they were really disappointed?
That chose to get three other players instead?
Bet they're not disappointed today, buddy. My goodness, what a crazy situation. So that is the story of the day so far around college football, college athletics. But we're going to stick with college football and talk a little football recruiting. Auburn picks up a huge commitment over the weekend. We'll talk about him, what it means, and why this is a good sign for head coach Alex Golish. All that coming up here as we're just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Want to talk a little Auburn football because big recruiting news from over the weekend. Auburn picks up its highest-ranked recruit in the class so far of 2027, Mycen Johnson-Cook, committed to Auburn on Saturday. Tigers worked extremely hard on this one, had him in for several visits, Christian, brought him back for a multi-day visit, and that was the one where they were able to get the commit. They get the verbal commit over Ole Miss, Kentucky, LSU, and the big one was Miami.
Yeah.
It came down to Auburn and Miami, Florida. Tigers able to get it done, a four-star running back. The dude is just...
He's a middle linebacker.
Yeah, he's massive. I mean, he looks very, very good. Everybody in the recruiting space has talked about this guy being a college football playoff caliber starting running back. Like, I mean, he is a dude who will start and could start on a top 10, top 15 type of program. 6'2", 235, from the state of Illinois.
Just say that again.
Yeah. 6'2", 235 pounds.
When's the last time Auburn's had a running back like that?
I don't know. Because Kerryon wasn't that big. He wasn't that beefy. Jarquez was in that category. I don't think he was 235, though, was he? He may have been 235. I can't remember how tall he was, but you turn on the film of Mycen Johnson-Cook. Not only does he have the bowling ball effect, he gets out in open space, he's gone.
Jarquez Hunter is 5'9", 210.
Jeez. Yeah. I thought he was taller than 5'9".
I think that was his official...
Cleats and helmet give him...
Sure.
5'10", 5'11", maybe, but...
At the draft was 5'10", so...
Ah, well... They don't know what they're talking about.
I was going to say, do that with what you will, but I mean...
Yeah, Mycen Johnson-Cook, this dude is fast. He is incredible.
He's already a unanimous four-star player, regardless of wherever you look. He's the fourth-ranked running back in the class. 24-7 has him as like the 72nd overall player, but the composite has him as the 46th overall national player. You mentioned the big ones, Auburn over LSU and Miami, who is fighting really hard for this as well. And man, you hope that this can be that first domino, especially on the offensive side of the football, for the way that Golish wants to run this offense and wants to be able to recruit. I mean, my goodness, he's in every single five-star quarterback conversation, to where you feel like every single time it's okay, he releases his top three and you see, okay, Auburn hasn't really pursued this guy since January, but Auburn still makes the top three, and I believe some of that is just for the logo, for the clout purposes, as the youngins decide to say it. But it obviously has a little bit of legitimacy to where, man, it feels like it's just a matter of time until Auburn lands one of those big-time commits, one of those big-time names, and maybe having a big-time running back can be the one to spark that entire offensive side of things.
At 6'2", 235 pounds, this dude clocked back-to-back 4.44 second 40-yard dashes. Think about that. The fastest ever 40-yard dashes are what, like 4.1, 4.2, something like that?
I mean, if it's 4.1, it's very late side. Usually 4.21, 4.22 with, was it John Ross?
And this guy ran back-to-back, repeated 4.44 40-yard dashes at his size. That shows you how fast he is, how quick he is. A lot of the things on film show you his side-to-side speed. You get him running out of the pack, trying to turn the corner on the edge. I mean, he just beats everybody there. And straight-line speed, again, you're not going to catch him. Some name examples, Rudy Johnson, Stephen Davis, Bo Jackson is what somebody texted in for Auburn running backs of the past with similar builds of 6'2". 235.
Saquon Barkley is 6'2", 230.
And this guy's got a little taller.
But again, not comparing those two names because that's disrespectful to Saquon Barkley, but just from a beef and build style of things, that's a similar type of comparison.
Yeah, 247 says Auburn now has a 4-star running back, a 4-star defensive lineman, and a 3-star tight end, but a 4-star depending on where you look. So Auburn doesn't have the number of commits that everybody else has, but the quality is there for sure. And Alex Golas hasn't even coached a game yet. So we'll talk more football as we go, but we are talking baseball as Auburn gets another series win next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us as we flip over to talk a little Auburn baseball as the Tigers get another series win, this time over the Oklahoma Sooners. But before we do, I want to remind you that international soccer giant and the current World Cup champion Argentina will be meeting Iceland on Tuesday, June 9th at Jordan-Hare Stadium at 7:30 p.m. It's the first ever international soccer game to be played at Auburn. This is Argentina's last game before the World Cup, so be sure to try and go check them out, see them in person. Again, World Cup champions trying to defend their title just a few short days after that, but their last game before the World Cup. Tickets are starting at just $45. You can get your tickets online on their website at road226.com. ROADTO number 2, the number 6.com. Road226.com to buy your tickets. Be in person, witness history while you see Argentina and Iceland play a soccer match inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium June 9th at 7:30. And let's talk Auburn baseball, my friend, as the Tigers do it again. Another series win for Butch Thompson and Auburn. It was not stress-free by any means. They had to work for it, and it's another one of those series of what could have been in a good way, what could have been in a bad way, but at the end of the day, it's another series win, the Tigers' fourth in a row.
Yeah, four straight series wins for Butch Thompson and squad. It was a very, very gritty 6-4 win on Friday. It was the 2-1 loss on Saturday that felt like it built a little bit of frustration. We'll dive a little bit more into game by game with our conversation of baseball and a member of Auburn Baseball joining us on the show tomorrow. But that's the series tied at 1. You then go into Sunday and Oklahoma strikes first. And it was, oh gosh, not like this. Well, took a little bit of time for Auburn's offense to get going, but once they did, my goodness, I believe Auburn baseball has claimed it and copyrighted the Ethan Bingaman game, rightfully so. Eric Guevara just won SEC Player of the Week, primarily off of his Friday and Sunday performance. Auburn wins game 3, 14-4 in 8 innings. another incredibly, incredibly impressive performance by all three guys on the mound. I promise one day we'll be able to give Marciano run support, but my goodness, I mean, when you're looking at what Petrovic was able to do in Game 3, especially after giving up two in the top half of the first when it could have been a whole lot more to keep it at two, was a very big momentum builder. We'll talk about what also happened in the top half of that first inning here in just a moment as well. But Andreas Alvarez, man, gets another start, another quality start, another win, now second in the SEC in wins. And my goodness, I mean, you mentioned it. What could have happened? Yes. What could have happened? No. End of the day, all things considered, if I told you on Friday morning, hey, Auburn's going to win the series, are you going to be happy on Monday? The answer should and will always be yes. And Auburn finds a way to do it again and in completely different ways. All things considered, a very happy weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to complain against a top 10 team when you win the series, and you did what you were supposed to do at home. And it's not fair to sit here and say, well, you could have had the sweep if the offense showed up in game two. I do think we need to tip our cap to the pitching of Oklahoma, the lefty they threw on Saturday. I mean, it was effortless.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy, I mean,
and
it was just
95 to 97.
Yeah, off the left side was just, I mean, Auburn wasn't seeing it well.
Well, it's that, and it's what you see in a lot of these games, and especially the game two that, or even game one that Auburn's dropped a couple of times. There's a lot of desperation that comes with these games. Dropping game one in Gainesville was after a very bad midweek performance for Florida, to where, okay, we're desperate for a win, and by no means did Auburn play bad, but Florida kind of stole that game one from them. They then responded, Auburn did, by winning the series and winning the game two and game three on that Friday and Saturday. It's happened a couple of times. You saw it with Arkansas in game two. The desperation kind of came out, and sometimes that's when you play your best, yet I think it's a storyline and kind of a quote, an unofficial quote that we have tagged Butch Thompson for, of, yeah, you may be better in us than a, or maybe better than us in a game, but we're going to be better in the series. Mm-hmm. And that's what Auburn continues to prove. They did what they needed to do in game one. We talk about it so much. Dang it. Getting to the bullpen is so important on a Friday because, again, most guys that you see in game one, you're not going to see on Saturday. But sometimes you're going to see a guy on Friday, and then you're going to see a guy on Sunday. And that's what Oklahoma tried to do. That's what Oklahoma tried to get away with. And Auburn just absolutely obliterated that bullpen as soon as they were able to knock the Sunday starter out.
Well, speaking of bullpen, I mean, how about LJ Cormier for Auburn? I mean, he, in his one appearance on the weekend, came in 3 1/3, one hit, no runs, one walk, two strikeouts in 3 1/3, and held it down against Oklahoma. I mean, that's what you needed from him. He also pitched a little bit in the Samford game as well, where he went 5 1/3, two hits, no runs, a walk, and 7 Ks. I mean, LJ Cormier has come on extremely strong here down the stretch out of the pen for Auburn.
He's been a big piece that Auburn needed to find, and they've continued to do it. Jackson Sanders, our fourth starter, in there as well on Friday, going 2 1/3, allowing only one run and keeping Auburn in the contest, where, again, that run in the seventh really gave you a little bit of a boost. Oklahoma scored again in the eighth, but nothing after that. I mean, you combine what Alvarez does on Friday, what Marciano does in his starts on Saturday, and then what Petrovic is able to do. And funny enough, man, Petrovic may have the most and then the least amount of stress in every single one of his starts, because Sunday is usually that rubber match, and it's, okay, you got to find a way to eat some innings, find a way to keep this Auburn team in it, and then in his last, it feels like his last three or four starts on that Sunday, it's okay. By the time you're either out of the game or by the time you're halfway through your start, the Auburn offense comes to life, which they did on that Sunday where you only had to play eight innings.
Well, think about it this way, and I know the rotation has not been the same from start to finish in SEC play, but Auburn has yet to have a 2-0 lead in a series other than the Missouri series. You swept that series. That's the only time you've had a
by games.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Okay. That's the only time you've had a 2-0 lead in the series. So every other series, you've either been fighting to not get swept, or you've been fighting to win the series.
Yeah.
And we just haven't seen Petrovic in a situation a ton or recently or whatever, where it's like, hey, you have a chance to go sweep for us today, and what that would look like and what that first inning would look like for him, rather than rubber match. Hey, we got to have this game to not get swept or whatever the case may be. We haven't seen him in that situation very often because, again, you swept Missouri. You won the first game against Texas and lost the next two. You got swept by Alabama. You split the first two with Arkansas, won the rubber match. Split the first two with Kentucky, won the rubber match. Split the first two with Florida, won the rubber match. Split the first two with Oklahoma and won the rubber match, right? And as much as we sit here and say, man, it would be so awesome to have a sweep, because you could have swept Kentucky, you could have swept Florida, you could have swept Kentucky, you could have swept Arkansas. But when you start talking postseason of a regional, and then even more importantly, a super regional, man, Auburn winning all these game threes, which is what a super is a three-game set, it will come back and benefit this team. You can't flirt with danger this much all the time, but it will come back to benefit you, the fact that you've won. What is that? I mean, that's one.
You're 5-2, if that's what you're
looking at. I was just looking at rubber matches that you've won in a row. I mean, every series that you've won, four in a row, right? Arkansas, Kentucky, Florida, and Oklahoma. Yeah. You've won in the four series in a row that you've won, you took the rubber match in every single one.
And I think that goes to show the depth in the Auburn rotation, because, again, Jackson Sanders can be thrown in that lineup and you don't feel like there's a big step lost. You saw what he was able to do in game one against Florida. You saw what he's able to do in game one against Oklahoma. The ability for a starter to work his way kind of into the bullpen and not even be a game one, game two, game three guy, but it's okay, we're up two, we're in the sixth inning. All right, Jackson, go get loose. We need you to go and win it. We need you to go keep this team out in front, or we need you to almost turn into that long inning reliever guy of, okay, we need you to go get four innings because we don't really want to use the rest of these arms. And more times than not, man, he's looked so, so good since coming into this role, which goes to show his selflessness, because, man, working from a starter into, even if it is your top bullpen guy, it feels like a little bit of a kick down. But his ability to not take that as a personal thing and realize that he didn't really have his starting spot lost. It was just the fact of Andreas Alvarez just being that dang good of,
right,
we can't take him out. We got to find a way to put him in one of the rotation spots, and realizing that, man, sometimes Jackson could be thrown in the category of even more mentally tough, because you only have 15, 20 minutes maybe to go get ready, if even that. Sometimes it's, all right, you got to sprint down to the bullpen. You better go right now. We need to go get outs. That's so much more difficult than a starter who knows he's going this day, has all week to prepare, all afternoon to go through the pitching rotation, the pitching mechanics, the pregame, all sorts of things like that. And so much credit again goes to Jackson Sanders, but shows how good Auburn's pitching staff is, because there are not many teams, and in a regional and a super regional as well, you're going to see it. The game three pitcher, the game three is a lot of a bullpen game for a lot of teams. That third prized starter has become very, very valuable. And the fact that Auburn has 3.5 or 4 being with Jackson Sanders in that rotation as well puts Auburn in a very, very good spot come the postseason.
Which is why we put so much pressure, and obviously Butch does and Gabe does and things like that, putting pressure on the offense, because, man, we continue the trend of, look at the losses that Auburn has in SEC play. I mean, look at them. Going back to even the Texas series, but starting that Alabama series. Game one, you got rocked. You gave up 11, whatever. Game three, or game two on Saturday against Bama, you needed 4 runs to win that game, theoretically. On Sunday, you needed 4 runs to win that game, theoretically. Friday, the game against Arkansas, you lost in game two. You needed 4 runs to win that game, theoretically. I'm saying that because it's not all just,
it's not directly like that.
Correct, yeah. But looking at just the final score, that's what your offense needed. The game against Kentucky, you needed 6. The game against Florida, yeah, you gave up 6, whatever, right? Not a huge deal. But the game against Oklahoma that you lost, you needed three runs.
Yeah.
You needed three.
Four games where if you put up four runs, it's four indirect wins to your tally.
And just look at the total this weekend. You needed 5-3-5, theoretically, to win the games this weekend. Your offense should be able to do that every single game, even though you're going up against elite pitching. And it's only going to get tougher from here, going against Texas A&M, Mississippi State, and Georgia, right? But that's why there's so much pressure on the offense, because you can count on one hand an SEC play where an Auburn pitcher has not, quote-unquote, delivered.
Yeah.
But you can count on multiple hands and start counting on your toes how many times the offense has let them down.
Which goes to show you're at a spot now in the season, and the broadcast talked about it on TV. Brad Nandy did as well, and you feel like it just kind of around the SEC, watching the Georgia Ole Miss series, you felt a lot of that of this is the game three, because there were four rubber matches on Sunday with SEC series. Mm-hmm. It was, okay, Sunday is kind of the first day of there's a lot of teams that got to have it. There's a lot of teams that need to have one of those wins, and with Arkansas scoring two in the top half of the first inning, a man decided to step in and get rather emotional. A man that's not really known for doing that.
Yeah.
And I heard somebody talk about it a couple of days ago, about these coaches that have a very calm demeanor to where it's almost intimidating when they make their way out of the dugout, because they know they're not going to lose their temper unless A, they know they're right, or B, they think they need an argument, or C, they need to fire up the team. I think all three of those happened in the top half of the first inning when Arkansas strikes for two. Butch not happy with, or I guess it was the home half of the first inning, rather. It was with Frelick when it started. And Butch Thompson, the head coach for Auburn baseball, made his way out of the dugout, made his presence rather known, and was finger-pointing, was shouting, was yelling so much to where the home plate umpire told him, if you take another step forward, you're gone. He stood right there and started working his way back at the second, or the field umpire made his way over, and then Butch walked over there and was kind of giving his frustrations. And yes, do I think that was a little bit of frustration with the strike zone early? I think a lot of that was to fire up the team, because I think Butch realized how much of a must-need this game is just because of the three regular season series that you have upcoming. You're now at that spot of, say you continue to quote-unquote take care of business, that puts you at 4-5 to finish up the regular season, puts you at 16 SEC wins.
Which would be pretty darn good.
And we've talked about the jump from 14-16 to 15-15 to 16-14, and that is a game right there that Auburn was able to win and run rule Oklahoma in, started by Coach Butch Thompson, on just where this Auburn team should be, can be, and hopefully will be once the regular season concludes.
We'll talk about that and wrap up this conversation. Wrap up hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. As got a few more minutes talking some more Auburn baseball. Again, winning the series against Oklahoma. They're fourth in a row. And Christian, you had mentioned something with Butch Thompson about him coming out and getting fired up. And look, I'll be honest, I don't know the last time Butch Thompson got thrown out of a baseball game. I would be willing to bet, heck, he maybe never has. I really don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, yeah, he doesn't come out. And when he does come out, some people think it's arguing, but really he's coming out to get clarification most of the time on something. This was an argument. This was raising hell. This was getting after it on that game or in that game, because I don't really know what that strike zone was, to be quite honest with you. And you know it's bad when the catcher who's in the box, a.k.a. Chase Frelick, when the opposing catcher has a question about it, or there's a concern with the strike zone by a catcher in the box, that's when you know, okay, this dude behind the plate just doesn't have it.
Well, it sounds simple. It's not as simple, but for the baseball mind, I guess it is that simple. As difficult as it is to hit a baseball, these guys are good enough to be able to detect where pitches are going to be and where they are. And so Frelick on the, what was it? Was it the 1-2 or the 2-2 fastball that missed outside, didn't get the call. You saw him look back, and the question always with between hitters and umpires is, how far is that out?
Are you
going further out than that? Or is that something? And every once in a while it's, hey, did you miss that? Like, just asking that as straight up as it is. And so Frelick got that confirmation. And then the breaking ball, I think that was the 2-2. Then the 3-2 breaking ball was even further outside, and home plate umpire rung Frelick up. And that's why you saw him say, I just asked you.
Yeah.
I just asked if that was the location that was going to be a called third strike. And the breaking ball then missed even further outside. And so, Butch was relatively fiery. Confirmation. It was the first ejection since the series win over Alabama last year, where Butch watched some of the rally from the party deck, and so. Yeah. But does not happen very often whatsoever, and ultimately fired up this team. We saw him in Game 3 against Florida have that interview and talk about, if this team wants to get interested, we'll find a way to go and win this game. Maybe he sensed that same type of lackadaisical effort, or he just felt the momentum beginning to shift into the first base dugout after their win and then striking two early on. Maybe that was it, or maybe it was just, I'm going to go fire up the team. If I get thrown out, I get thrown out. But let me go try and fire this up, because I know how important a series win. I know how important this one game is going to be and can be even more important based off of what Auburn does in the final 9 regular season SEC games, because right now you have a solo spot for 5th at 12-9. You're a game, if not 2 games, in front of that roadblock that's right behind you.
Yeah, somebody texted into the text box, 334-784-1067, says they were listening to the Oklahoma broadcast as well, and they were talking about how bad it was both ways.
Yeah, it's frustrating when the hitter doesn't know the strike zone, nor does the pitcher. That's when things get really frustrating. If it's going to be one of those, okay, I'm giving 2 balls off each side or whatever the case may be, but the pitcher continues to hit his spot and batters get frustrated, so be it. But if I throw one pitch and it's a called strike, okay, let me go back to it the next batter and all of a sudden it's not a strike, I don't know what to throw either.
Just be consistent. Consistently good, consistently bad, doesn't matter. Just be consistent if you're going to be behind the plate. And that brought out some fire
in front of Jacob. Just be a robot.
I mean,
no.
ABS is working just fine in the majors. I'm cool if we want to bring it to college, too. It will happen before we know, and I can almost guarantee that. So, okay, hour number 1 is in the book. Stick around. We're going to talk some NFL draft coming up in hour number 2, where a bunch of Auburn guys landed, plus our man Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us. All that coming up in hour number 2.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway in hour number two. Oh, gosh. That's one of the dumber things I've seen Christian do on the way back from break or starting an hour. He got me. Congratulations. You broke me today. I'm impressed. Hour number two underway. If you missed any of the first hour of today's show, we talked some Auburn football recruiting, we talked some Auburn baseball winning, and we also talked Brendan Sorsby, who, I don't know, he may have been winning his bets. I don't know if he was or not. They didn't report that side of it, but a ton that we covered in the first hour. Seriously, Brendan Sorsby, the $5 million quarterback at Texas Tech, has taken a leave of absence from the program. He is now entered into a gambling rehab facility, so that's pretty wild. We did talk about Auburn football picking up a huge four-star running back commit this weekend, and Auburn baseball taking down Oklahoma. So all of that was in the first hour of today's show. If you missed it, you can always go back and check out the podcast version on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we got our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joining us as he does every single Monday at 3:30. We'll talk Auburn golf, we'll talk Auburn football, we'll talk Auburn baseball, and just about everything else with Mr. Hillman. We also have some of our high school playoff updates that we want to be able to get out for everybody as well with Lee Scott Academy and Auburn High School. But we start hour number two with a little bit of NFL draft talk. Who went where? Who didn't hear their name initially, but who was making their way to training camp as Auburn continues to have players that get all sorts of invites? All of that here in a really fun conversation, a really fun discussion here to start hour number two. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, a part of the show, the phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. If Auburn got a player that's your favorite team, or maybe you're unhappy with your rival picking up one of the Auburn players. We've heard a couple of those throughout the day, throughout the weekend as well. But again, the phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes here at 334-321-1390. The text box always open at 784-1067.
Yeah, and so the NFL draft has come and gone. You're starting to see a lot of the undrafted free agents get signed and things like that. It was a exciting draft. I think a couple of teams that stand out to me before we dive into the Auburn specifics. I think the Jets had a really good draft. I think the Browns had a really good draft. I think the Cowboys actually had a pretty good draft.
I feel like anybody that got Caleb Downs was going to win the draft.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, Caleb Downs is a stud. I mean, he will be so good no matter where he is, but they've been missing that guy in the secondary. He'll play safety, obviously, like he did at Ohio State, and I just think that he was somebody that the Cowboys definitely needed. I think Cleveland did night. They got your guy, Casey Concepcion, yeah. The wide receiver from Texas A&M. They somehow also got their hands on Denzel Boston, yes, the wide receiver from Washington. I don't really understand how they just lucked into getting both of those guys. On top of picking an offensive tackle in the top 10 of the draft, they also picked up another offensive tackle, Austin Barber from Florida, a couple of Alabama guys, and they picked up Taylen Green from Arkansas just randomly as a quarterback who, don't overlook that one in Cleveland. I think they got a ton, man. I really do.
That's one of those. You have the question, and health, I guess, is one of the biggest things, but when the NFL scouts look at somebody like Anthony Richardson from Florida, who didn't really pan out in college, but it was, okay, he has all of the intangibles. He has everything that you need to be an NFL quarterback, and he started games with the Colts and started before getting hurt and missing a lot, if not all, of last year. But, man, Taylen Green, you feel like, falls into that category, although still having success at the college level. When you talk about the arm strength, you talk about the speed, the mobility, man, that's somebody that you feel like would bring a whole lot of excitement to an NFL program. Did you mention the Ravens as
no,
well?
No, not yet. No.
Ravens are one for me that stands out, getting one of the offensive linemen from Penn State. They also got Zion Young, the Missouri edge as well. Yeah. Also got, man, we talk about all the receivers that were in this draft. Holy cow. Jacoby Lane, who was the wide receiver two for Lincoln Riley behind Mekhi Lemon, who went to the Eagles. That was a little bit of a seems like a good pick. Maybe that's the A.J. Brown kind of fill the shoes of since A.J. Brown's showed his consistent frustrations. Maybe passing is just not what the Eagles are meant to do at all. But getting Jacoby Lane, also got Elijah Surratt as well.
Yeah.
He's going to be a really, really good slot receiver for Lamar Jackson. And so those guys are ones that quickly at least rise to the top in terms of big-time winners when you look at the draft.
The Jets, again, I go back to them. David Bailey, the edge from Texas Tech, they picked him number two overall. They got Kenyon Sadiq, the tight end from Oregon. They also took Omar Cooper, the other receiver from Indiana. They took D'Angelo Pines, an All-American corner from Indiana. They also took Cade Klubnik from Clemson, the quarterback. I don't know about that one.
Did you see his video that was released?
Uh-uh.
Where he was, I forgot exactly what. When did he get drafted? Was it third round, fourth round, or was
fourth
it even
round.
Fourth round?
Yeah, fourth round.
He posted something, and I think Clemson made the official like edit for it, but he said, you know, I woke up this morning and I just had a really weird feeling that Jets were gonna pick me and I didn't want to go anywhere else, and everybody's responded to it. It's like, Mr. Alex on Jeopardy, I'll take 800 for things that never
did not happen. Yeah, okay, buddy.
I woke up and I just felt like the Jets were gonna pick me and I didn't want to go anywhere else.
I mean, company man, get out of baby. Company man is Cade Klubnik. But a lot of people were surprised because, like, Nussmeier didn't get drafted in there, and some of those guys that Klubnik got drafted over some of those names.
Yeah.
Diego Pavia didn't get drafted, even though he had all 32 hats on the table ready to go. And somebody
first Heisman finalist since 14, I believe, to not get drafted.
Somebody quote tweeted that picture and said, "Yeah, he didn't have the Birmingham Stallions hat out there." So. He did sign with, was it the Ravens that he signed with?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, just another winner.
Yeah. Wow. Well, several NFL teams, I think, got winners from Auburn, because there were several guys who either got drafted or have signed those undrafted free agent contracts. And Auburn has another first-round draft pick, and one that is not surprising. Little surprised that he fell as far as he did. But he was officially in the first round. Our man Keldrick Falk, 31st overall to the Tennessee Titans. I think Tennessee got a good one, man. I really do. I think he's somebody who is a leader. He's somebody who just gets after the football. And when he's not double teamed every play, I think they're gonna find out just how good he is. I know his draft stock, not plummeted, but it definitely dropped. I mean, there was talks of him being a top 10 pick at one point, but he still found his way in the first round, and I just hope Tennessee uses him properly.
You would hope so, considering they traded up to go get somebody like that. And so there should be a whole lot of excitement. And again, yeah, we've seen the speculations on the average at best pass rusher. He clogs up holes decently, and it's like, okay, well, then you go and watch how much better he was than everybody, and it took the left guard and the left tackle and the running back chipping him for him to not be into the backfield. We talk so much about skill position guys. You get judged off of how much you hear their names. Most defenders that are really, really good at the game, you don't hear their name, because it's, okay, we're going to find 15 and we're going to run the opposite way. Or some of the top corners in the league. I mean, Revis Island of, okay,
yeah,
we're not throwing that way. You might hear his name once or twice a game, but he's not making an impact because he's locking up wide receiver number one. You feel like Keldrick Falk falls into that conversation, falls into to that tagline of, yeah, you never heard his name because everybody knew where he was at all times on the field.
Yeah, so he goes 31st overall, does Keldrick Falk, to the Tennessee Titans. Then you have Keyron Crawford, who will be going out to Las Vegas as the 67th overall pick to the Raiders. He will be joining...
Apologies to any parents with kids right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like we're slowly moving out of it, right? I feel like we're slowly getting away from it.
I don't know.
I don't know either. He joins
I set the score multiple times around kids for Lee Scott's. We were up 4-1. In game one. And
I keep forgetting that that's a new
I
one.
I guess that's a new one.
Thankfully, I haven't been around.
And
that
the reason of what that was, I asked a couple of the kids, what does that mean? I don't know, 6-7. And it was like, that doesn't help me out.
So there literally is no reason. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so popularity pick for Keyron Crawford.
Yeah, I mean, they had to do it. But he joins a ton of guys that Vegas Vegas drafted. I mean, Mike Washington, the running back from Arkansas, he's joining Trey Zun, I forget, the center from Texas A&M. Obviously, Fernando Mendoza, the quarterback, the number one overall pick. But Keyron Crawford, taken in the third round, I think is solid for another Auburn defender who played on the edge at that spot. And so excited to see what he does in Las Vegas.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about how if he can work his way to either one of the weak side edge rushers or almost work his way into that outside linebacker type of role and almost work behind Max Crosby.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's one of the best in the business at the edge spot.
I guess they're happy that he's back as,
I guess so.
As a Raider. Yeah. And so, yeah, a lot of people are kind of seeing where Keyron can fit that mold, but really, really excited for his potential.
Yep. The one that I think the most excited about for the team that took him and the guy overall.
Yeah, the team that took him.
Yeah. The Cincinnati Bengals.
And for you to compliment the Bengals, I mean, that takes a lot.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, for me to not call them the Bungles is a big deal. Yeah, Cincinnati taking Connor Lou as a center at 128th overall. Taking him in the fourth round, I think he has every opportunity to be the starting center in Cincinnati not before his career is done, but in the next several years, I think Connor Lou can be a starting center in Cincinnati. I really do. For an organization that's had such bad offensive lines for so long, and they've just gotten quarterbacks killed back there. I mean, Joe Burrow hasn't been able to stay healthy because they can't get an offensive line that's worth the crap.
Yeah, every time they turn around, it's, all right, my bad. Let me pick you up off the turf.
Connor Lou was projected as a first-rounder coming out of high school. He just had the knee injury that kind of shook all that up, if you will. Connor Lou is an NFL starting center. I really do believe it. I remember talking about him on this very show when he was coming out of high school. I think Connor Lou was a steal by the Bengals to get him in the fourth round.
At very worst, it's another body that they can use something for. But we've seen the talent with Connor Lou before and after, you mentioned with the knee injuries of, man, can easily, I say easily, not easily, but can relatively easily work his way into either the rotation, if not one of those starting line spots for the Bengals that very much are in need.
Yeah, I mean, could they think about moving him to a guard? Maybe. I mean, he's played center his whole life. That's just what he has done. So I don't know if that would be a conversation or not, but I do think he's starting caliber. So shout out to Connor Lou, again, taken in the fourth round by the Cincinnati Bengals. How about Jeremiah Wright getting drafted by the New Orleans Saints at 132nd overall in the NFL draft? I mean, that's a big deal for Auburn to have several offensive linemen drafted, even though I understand Auburn fans probably are cussing at the radio of, well, were they really that good, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But individually, I think Auburn, it shows, had some talent up front.
Very much so. I mean, this guy was a three-star out of high school and played all 4 years for the Tigers.
Yeah.
And that's something that you hear all about of, okay, well, in the transfer portal process and the transfer portal day and age, how many guys can you really claim that you developed or you made better and they're graduates of your program, right? I mean, you hear that all the time, especially with a guy who spent so many years at one school, went to another, and graduated for, or maybe not graduated, but finishes eligibility. Bo Nix is kind of the guy that you think of on that side of things of, oh, well, can Auburn claim him, or is he Oregon's, or did Jalen Hurts, or whoever else? I mean, whatever they want to use. And in the transfer portal day and age, it puts a little bit more of a gray area, but being able to almost claim this for any sort of offensive line or defensive line to say, okay, this guy was a not overly sought after prospect as a three-star coming out of high school, but put in the work at our program and now is playing in the NFL after being a draft pick, 132nd overall. I think that is a big time get in terms of what Auburn then can use to try and recruit with in the future.
And then the last one that Auburn had drafted at 186th overall to the New York Giants, Bobby Jamison Travis. And this is an interesting situation because drafted at that nose tackle position, the Giants just traded away their nose tackle in Dexter Lawrence. So Do I instantly think of Bobby Jamison Travis as a starting nose tackle in the NFL? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But apparently the Giants saw something, and he's at least going to have a shot, Christian, to start at that position. And shoot, that's all you can ask for.
All you can ask for is a shot, and you have your phone rang, and that was shot number one. And then you realized, oh, my gosh, okay, I'm not having to work, which would have been awesome for him to work behind a guy like Dexter Lawrence for a year or two, almost like you see about that on the quarterback side of things. But, again, he was with the Tigers for 3 years, and so that's another big-time boost that you can use of, okay, these aren't just one-year guys that we go and rent and now claim. These are big-time gets that we were able to either get out of high school or get very early on and continue to develop, and now they're playing at the next level. And for a Giants team that has, safe to say, struggled with a new head coach, a new opportunity, I think there's a whole lot of excitement there.
My Green Bay Packers did not draft a single – actually, I take that back. They did draft one offensive player. They drafted a center. Other than that, corner, D-tackle, edge, corner, and a kicker.
But UDFAs – Dylan Wade goes to the Green Bay Packers.
All right.
It was announced a really, really early Sunday morning. And so,
yeah.
I mean,
Packers got a corner, man. That's all I give. That's all I care. That's what we need. A Brandon Cisse from South Carolina. Dude's a stud.
They didn't go and get a quarterback or a middle of the shelf receiver. So
no.
You should be okay.
I'm also very excited about Chris McClellan, the D tackle from Missouri.
Sure.
I'm very excited about Deni Dennis Sutton, the edge player from Penn State,
yeah,
who was just tearing it up in Happy Valley. Very excited about that. And Trace Mack is the Florida kicker who was one of the most accurate kickers in the country. Packers kicking has not been great as of late. We're relying on a dude who's like 84 years old and Mr. Brandon McManus. So maybe we just drafted a starting rookie kicker. I don't know.
I mean, throw him to the fire.
Sure.
Why not? Right?
Why not?
Some of the undrafted free agents, again, Dylan Wade to the Packers. Tight end Brandon Frazier signed with the Atlanta Falcons. So
did
cool
see
to see he's staying closer to home. And he could be somebody, man, that I think could work into that big-time rotation for the Falcons with Bijan Robinson and his ability to get to the edge. And with Brandon Frazier being one of those primary blocking type of tight ends rather than a Kyle Pitts who wants to be the pass catcher,
mm-hmm,
I think Brandon Frazier could honestly be a really good part of that offense. You also look at Mason Murphy going to the Chicago Bears, Too Tall Miller to the Browns. And then just a little bit ago, you had Jaquez Robinson sign a training deal with the Packers as well. And so still goes to show that there's a lot of talent that was on these Auburn teams, which shows the frustration that was there over the past couple of seasons.
Yep. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. And while we have a few minutes before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, want to update you on what's going on with some high school postseason stuff. Baseball, and softball. We'll talk about that coming up next. Hour number two is underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 1067. Got a couple of minutes before we go and talk with our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. We have a ton to talk about with him. We'll talk, of course, baseball winning against Oklahoma. We will talk softball probably as they capped off Senior Day with a nice win over the weekend, plus some golf updates, everything else going on as well around Auburn Athletics. So he will be joining us on the phone lines coming up at 3:30. But while we have a couple of minutes, it's a good chance for us to update you on what's going on with the local Diamond Sports. Auburn High and Lee Scott postseason begins this week for Auburn High baseball, softball, but it continues this week for Lee Scott, huh? Nicely done. Got the sweep on Friday, Christian. Didn't have to play on Saturday.
Yeah, to nobody's complaint, not having to drive back up to Montgomery and play a game three. Lee Scott sweeps St. James. They went at 4-1 in game one, 4-2 in game two in that best of three set. To advance to round two. Braden Martin, Barrett Cook, the only guys you needed on the mound. Both guys went the distance and both had 8 strikeouts and both absolutely dominated. And it was a series win that you feel like, okay, 4-1, 4-2, you're okay, you won those, but how good do you feel off of those? It's not those 8-1, 9-2, or even the 13-2 types of games that you sometimes see in round one. But my goodness, this Lee Scott offense ran into a lot of really bad luck. They lined out, I believe it was 7 times in the first 5 innings.
Jeez.
To where it was like, all right, forget finding a barrel. See if you can place one in between the infield and the outfield, because you're hitting it too hard, either right at somebody, or a center fielder made a couple of really nice diving plays to rob you of a couple of hits. But to see Lee Scott, man, find alternative ways to get guys on base, get guys over, and get guys in. You went a little bit more on the small ball side of things, and you forced the Trojans' defense to make plays, which they made plenty of really good plays. But Lee Scott was able to capitalize on the 3 major mistakes that you feel like they had. They had one where there was a swinging bunt, actually, that would have been an inning-ending double play. Instead, the catcher it's a tough word I've never been able to use.
Airmailed.
Yeah, for some reason, that's, I don't know, it's dyslexic.
I scream it because I'm playing cornhole, just airmail, and let it fly.
For some reason, that word never clicks with my brain.
Catch me at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge.
Airmailed. But that's what the catcher overthrew. I guess that's the word I could easily pivot to. First baseman, runner came around and scored, had a single that scored. So 2 runs that scored in that one inning. And then Lee Scott in game 2, again, continued to go to the small ball and had an RBI single to right, and then a safety squeeze that ended up being a really perfectly placed bunt. 2 runs scored on that side of things. Also capitalized on a throwing error as well. And so really, really nice to see relieving, you could almost use, based off how the season has gone at times, for this team to be able to handle adversity the way that they did, and overcome it and continue their season. So Lee Scott Academy on the road in round 2, and with the AHSAA travel rules, Lee Scott hosting round 2 with Thorsby making their way to John Meals Field. Should be a really fun series coming up this weekend.
Yeah, so round 2 for you guys. Round 1 for myself with Auburn High School. That is baseball and for softball this weekend. Tigers able to get the 2-game sweep of Smith Station last week, able to punch their ticket to the postseason, but also secure the number 1 seed out of 7A Area 4 for the first time since 2021. And so head coach Tommy Carter and the Tigers going to host the first round of the playoffs for the first time since 2021 at C-Mode Field. Fun fact, 2021 was the last time Auburn High won the state championship. So maybe there's something in the cards there. But
Auburn, suck if history repeated itself.
That would be terrible. I'd hate for Tigers to make a run into late May. But yeah, Auburn going to host Daphne out of 7A Area 2. Yes, 7A Area 2. Auburn played Daphne once in the regular season at Daphne, beat them 2-1. So we'll see. Daphne, the runner-up out of that area. Auburn will host them 2 games on Friday, if game Saturday. That rolls right into Auburn High softball in the area tournament, hosting for the first time since 2021. First game for them is Saturday morning. They'll have a couple games then and some games on Monday. And if everything plays out the way that it's supposed to, we will be able to broadcast all of it. All the baseball games, all the softball games, Friday, Saturday, and Monday. So a very busy weekend back behind Auburn High School.
Just call the game from the left field foul pole at SEMO Field. Look down behind center field of softball and call them both at the same time.
I think we should. We'll see if Jack Hutton and I can pull that off this weekend on 96.3 W Lee. So more on that as the week goes along. But Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us next.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And we get to the phone line to welcome in our longtime Monday 3:30 guest on the phone lines. He's with the Auburn Sports Network. He is Jacob Hillman. My man, it's good to talk to you. We appreciate you taking the time as always and hope everything is good in your world.
Always good to be with you guys, and especially after a pretty successful weekend across the Auburn athletics landscape.
Yeah, well, there's a ton to talk about, and we'll start with what a lot of our conversation has been today is Auburn baseball, who picks up their fourth series win in a row, taking down Oklahoma, winning two out of three, winning the rubber match yet again over the weekend. And Auburn does a little bit of everything right. Jacob, they pitch well, they hit well when they needed to, they don't make mistakes, and another series win for Butch Thompson and the boys.
And it really shows. And the SEC Weekly Honors, where Eric Guevara and Eric Bingaman are both selected as Guevara the Player of the Week and Bingaman as the Freshman of the Week, both those guys came through huge in both wins and have throughout the season as well. And it's all culminated to what was a heck of a weekend for both of those guys. As you know, Guevara was on a long hitting streak that got snapped on Saturday night in that loss, but then he bounces back with a 4-for-4 day, had a chance at 5, but he was hit by a pitch. So he reached base 5 times in the Sunday game. And then Bingaman, obviously, with the 3 home run game, first freshman to ever do it in an Auburn uniform, and first Auburn player, period, to do it in quite some time. So just a really impressive outing, especially on Sunday after what was a heck of a fight in games 1 and 2. Chase Fralick, he homers in all 3 games, first Auburn player to do that in 3 straight games this season. So I just think that what we saw was the surge in power hitting that's come along over the last few weeks, but it really culminated in obviously yesterday's 6 home run outing. And the pitching, while it wasn't maybe the stellar performances that we've seen over the past few weeks, you know, high pitch counts, the early in games, Alex Petrovic said it best about if a team is going to jump on them, they need to do it early because he's going to settle in and he's going to find it. So, yeah, you might get a couple runs in the first inning or second inning, but after that, all those guys, Marciano, Sanders, and Petrovic, as well as Alvarez, they're going to find it at some point. So I thought that was a very confident answer that he gave to Brad Law on the Auburn Sports Network on the postgame show yesterday. But it just kind of – that tells me this team is trending in the right direction and continues to.
Hillman, what are your thoughts as well? Because you see all about it on TV, you hear about it as well on the radio side of things, but unless you're actually there at the location of wherever the dramatics happen, you don't really get the full feel of it. And so wanted you to be able to break down a little bit of Butch Thompson coming out of the dugout early in game 3, home half of the first inning after the strike 3 call with Chase Fralick, and then how you saw the team respond to what Butch was getting upset about, and whether that was just to fire him up, whether that was to actually talk a little bit of strategy and maybe some sense into the home plate umpire as well. Yeah. But what did you see from Butch Thompson, and what did you see from how the team responded ultimately with a run rule victory and not having to go the entire distance?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I actually missed the top half of the first inning because I was watching Auburn softball wrap up the series against Ole Miss, winning 13-3. And when I was walking over, I was listening to Andy and Brad call that top half of the first inning. And then that's kind of when things shifted going into the bottom half of the first inning, which you mentioned. Of him coming out of the dugout, and after Chase Fralick struck out in the bottom half of the first inning on what clearly Chase thought was a very similar call to a pitch in the top half that led to Oklahoma scoring those runs, and it didn't go the same way. It wasn't called the same way. And, you know, I don't know. I think when Coach Thompson does something like that, part of it's to fire up his team. Part of it, though, is to kind of raise the antennas of that home plate umpire. Like, listen, we're not going to do this for 5 innings, and then we're going to talk about let's handle this right now. And obviously, like I said, it fired up this team, and they ultimately win it in run rule fashion. So I really think that that's something that he's a veteran coach. He knows what he's doing. And at times, and he's a very even keeled guy as well. So, yeah. When that something like that happens, it's very he knows what he's doing with it. There's a reason for it. It's not just him upset or anything like that. He is out there to talk to the umpire because he has a goal in mind in doing that. And I think it was successful in game 3 against the Sooners.
We got our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7. And as we look ahead now past the series, what Auburn did against Oklahoma, you go into probably the toughest stretch for any team across college baseball in the last 3 weeks of the season. No midweek game this week. Tigers head to College Station to take on Texas A&M in a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. Then they take on Mississippi State on the road in a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series before coming home against Georgia in a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. I mean, that has to be the toughest stretch in the country, right?
Yeah, it's, I would say, without question, with two of those series coming on the road, plus your two midweek games coming on the road against top 30 RPI teams. UAB might just be on the outside of the top 30, but Jacksonville State, a bona fide NCAA tournament team, and UAB is right there on the outside looking in if it's not in the field right now. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough stretch to end this season. You know, you've got a Texas A&M team that is as hot as anybody. You've got a Georgia team that tops the SEC standings and hits more home runs than anyone else. And Mississippi State that's coming off its first sweep of LSU, I think, since the mid-'80s. So these teams are both, or all three of these teams are playing as well as they have all season and are doing it at the right time. But you can say the same about Auburn, and that's why it's going to be very important for these last 3 weekends for the Tigers. And I would say these midweeks are just as important, even though they're highly rated in the RPI and you're going on the road. It's probably not going to impact your seating when you get to the selection show, but it might be the difference between a super regional, a national seed, or just a 9 or 10 seed. So whatever happens in those weekend games, you need to handle business in the midweek. And then if you can go, I don't know, 5-4 in these three series, then you are absolutely a national seed. And I think there's even an argument if you go 4-5 over these last 3 weekends. So that's kind of the key right now is finding out, all right, what teams are dropping into seeding. Like you saw, like Vanderbilt gave Texas a heck of a fight this weekend. Obviously the Commodores are, they're trying to make their way into the NCAA tournament, yet I thought Texas was going to handle that series pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the case. And then you look at Georgia. They had to fight like crazy against Ole Miss. So those kinds of series, those are going to make the difference when it gets to the selection and where teams are seated in the NCAA tournament, and that's why Auburn needs to handle business over these next few weeks.
Well, Hillman, you made a phenomenal point that I had not put together. Auburn will now play 8 games in a row away from Plainsman Park. Yeah. Because of Texas A&M, UAB, Mississippi State, and Jacksonville State. I mean, that's not easy for a baseball team to do. I don't care who you're playing.
Well, and you look at it, the strength of schedule going into this week is number 3 in the country, and the RPI is 6, so you win a few of those games, that RPI is going to jack up, and obviously the strength of schedule is going to continue to maybe go up a tick or so. So it's so tough at this point in the season to go on the road against these teams. Like UAB is trying to get into the NCAA tournament. Jacksonville State might be trying to fight for a 2 seed in a regional, and those kinds of things are all going to factor into how impactful those games are. Those are going to be awesome crowds as well that you're facing up against. And obviously mm-hmm. we know what Auburn's going to face when it goes out to College Station and when it goes to Duty Noble Field at Mississippi State. So all of that factored in leads to, like you said, the toughest stretch that is left in college baseball for any team in the nation.
We got our guy, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, here with us on the phone lines. And Hillman, I truly do apologize, and I have apologies that you unfortunately have no more eligibility, that you could not make your way out to Sea Island. Unfortunately, we got our guy Jackson Coivin, who was able to take care of business, and so my goodness, what a fantastic weekend it was. A three-peat for Mr. Coivin, putting up numbers that are just astronomical and ones that the golf world truly has never seen before.
It's really incredible, and if you scroll through social media and see a lot of the posts about him and kind of where he ranks according to some data in the world, that's counting professional golfers. It's kind of wild where he's probably a top 50 golfer at least in the world right now, even in the professional game and everything. It's pretty incredible. You go and look back at his PGA Tour success last year after the college season was over, where he got sponsor exemptions into those those fields. He was finishing in the top 10. He had chances at winning those tournaments going into Sundays, and he wasn't able to get the job done. That's probably to Auburn's benefit, where he did end up coming back and playing this season and winning that SEC championship, as well as a ton of tournaments elsewhere this year. And obviously, I think there's a sense where they feel like they came up well short of their goals this week. They didn't win, obviously, the team match play title after being in first place, the number one seed after the stroke play portion. They wanted to close it out. But that's something that's going to fuel them, obviously, for the postseason. Jackson was incredible. You listen to some of the broadcasts and what they had to talk about him, and it's all about he's got every part of his game ready for the professional level. He's the best putter people have ever seen. I tend to agree with that. He's an incredible putter, and that's what's going to carry him into the professional game. But, you know, going to Saturday when Auburn fell to Ole Miss in the semifinals, I thought it was really interesting where, you know, the freshmen delivered. Jake Albert and Logan Riley both had fairly easy matches for themselves to win and set the tone. It just obviously Ole Miss played incredibly well against Coyvan, Pope, and Gilbert to win those matches. So that gives me a lot of encouragement going into NCAA tournament play where, hey, look, if these freshmen are firing on all cylinders, we know that Jackson Coyvan, Josiah Gilbert, and Caden Pope are all going to also deliver at some point. It was a matter of Ole Miss playing really well in that match.
Well, Hillman, I know you have the information there in front of you to plug what people need to know in terms of the next steps for men's golf and things like that, but also tennis as well for Auburn. I wanted to allow you to talk about that because there's some big news as of late for Auburn tennis.
That's right. Auburn men's tennis is in to the NCAA tournament. They will be heading to Baylor for the regional there as a number two seed. And the women's tennis is going to find out women's tennis is going to be hosting. And what we don't know is where they'll be seated and who obviously they'll be playing. We'll find that out in the next hour. And it's possible they're up there. They could be a number one seed. We'll see. And that's going to be similar to men's golf when we find out. I'm not sure exactly when that selection is, but regional action will be in Athens, I believe, next week. May 18th, so actually a couple of weeks from now. So some time for this team to kind of rest up and get ready for all that. But Athens is the closest site. Men's golf is going to be the number one national seed, and they'll be heading to Athens for the NCAA regional site. And it's just hard to deny the Tigers after what they did throughout the regular season, even with how the SEC championship ended. So that'll be a big deal. We'll also find out about NCAA women's golf seating coming up over the next few weeks. But other than that, right here on campus, not a ton going on, but Auburn baseball and Auburn softball are both, like we talked about, kind of wrapping up the regular season. Softball will have its final regular season series at LSU starting Thursday. So Thursday through Saturday before it heads to Kentucky for the SEC tournament. Britt Bowen will have the call from Baton Rouge with airtime at 5:45 on Thursday and Friday, and then Saturday will be at 3:45. All that action on the Auburn Tigers app. And then Auburn baseball visits Texas A&M. And that one's a Friday through Sunday series with the Tigers visiting the Aggies on Friday at 7 and then Saturday at 2 and Sunday wrapping up the series at 1 o'clock. All that coverage on Wings 94.3 FM. And again, just a huge, huge series with how hot that Texas A&M team. I listen, Georgia is at the top of the SEC standings, but I think Auburn and Texas A&M are probably the two hottest teams right now in the SEC. Track and field goes to Athens for another tournament. And then, like I said, men's and women's tennis, they're playing this weekend. We expect women's tennis to be hosting this weekend. So stay tuned to AuburnTigers.com. Follow at Auburn Women's Tennis on Twitter and Instagram for all those details. We just don't know exactly when that'll be happening and who will be visiting the Tigers. And make sure you tune into the Talking Tigers podcast. So much content over the last few weeks and upcoming about the Jordan Hare North Project, about the World Cup friendly, and then just everything else that's going on with Auburn Athletics going on. So so excited for all that coming up.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, man, always appreciate your time, your information as well. And we will do it again next Monday where we'll talk more baseball, more softball, and more updates around Auburn Athletics.
That's right. Looking forward to it, guys. War Eagle.
Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Check them out. Check them out. They do great work and covering everything going on the Plains. We will take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network for joining us on the phone lines, as he always does, each and every Monday at 3:30. Talked a ton of Auburn athletics updates from baseball, softball, golf, and tennis, right? The spring sports coming down the home stretch and into the postseason. So talked a lot of that with him. We've talked NFL draft today. We've talked Auburn football recruiting today. We've talked Auburn baseball today. We've talked Brendan Sorsby news today. I mean, tons of stuff on the program. A very busy Monday. So if you missed any of the show, you can always go back and catch it with the podcast version. We post it for you very shortly after the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com and our podcast center. So we've got a couple of minutes, then we will hand it off to The Drive. Those guys are live at Franklin Tire and Auto, so they'll be going on here in just a couple of minutes. Somebody texted us, Christian, in this hour of the show, and said, remember a month ago when Mets, Phillies, and Alabama fans all liked baseball? Wonder what happened. They've been real quiet as of late.
Pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Pretty damn cool. Yeah. I used to be a.
Anymore.
Huh? Oh, yeah. It's probably in the system somewhere. I just don't know where it is. I used to be a Red Sox fan. I used to watch baseball. I used to like baseball. And maybe I will. Somebody did text me earlier about asking what the heck happened, because the Red Sox just decided to clean house. They were like, you know what?
And Cora and Jason Varitek and those guys did not seem phased or unhappy.
Yeah, they all hopped on a private jet with big old grins and said, "Peace out, Girl Scout. See you later."
It was almost like...
I've been hearing rumblings, though, that I think it goes deeper than what happened there.
It always does.
I think there's something in the Red Sox organization that's just not being handled right. And I don't know what that is, and that's really unfortunate, but I hated to see, and again, it wasn't a total clean house, but I mean, fired the manager and three other guys. Like, that's this early in the season too. I think the Red Sox decided, look, this team is too talented. They've started off really poorly. Something has to change. And if we were going to make the change, we may as well do it now.
Yeah.
So
we're not going to sit here and handcuff ourselves to where hopefully there's success, yet when we do have that, we're 20 games out of the division.
Yeah,
you're
exactly
at the point of, it didn't really go how we wanted it to last year. We'll give it another opportunity, and you were kind of seeing that exact same path. But, unfortunate and interesting to see how that unfolds, because the people that got canned seem a little bit happier than everybody else, although the players and Trevor Story and guys like that were not too happy about it either.
Yeah, and they were not given a chance to speak about it in the team meeting when they were informed about everything. They were not really allowed to, like, comment on it. So, yeah. Here's the crazy thing, though. As bad as the season has been, the Red Sox are only 7 games back. I know it's early, but it's not like the Yankees are just going crazy. They're 18-10, which is solid, right? The Rays are 16-11. But the Orioles, Blue Jays, and Red Sox are all under 500. So, like, 7 games is a lot this early, but it's not the worst. The Phillies and the Mets are 10.5 games back. So, could be worse.
Could always be worse. The Braves posted something not too long ago of a almost in response and laughing. It was a picture of Ozzie Albies because the MLB released their power rankings, and the Braves are third, despite having the best record and the first team to 20 wins in baseball. Take a wild guess of who they have as number one.
Wow, I have no idea. Do they play on the West Coast?
They do.
Wow. Do they play in one of the major cities of the United States?
I would say they do.
Yeah. Is it a 3-word team not named San Diego?
It is.
Wow. Viva Los Doyers.
Yeah. Can you guess the second team as well?
Was it San Diego?
No, oh, God, no. Further opposite side.
Oh, yeah. The Yankees.
The Yankees.
The Yankees. I mean, the Padres have a good record, though. They're 18-9. They're right there with them.
I think they're fifth, yeah, behind the Cubs and the Braves.
The Cubbies, who have a worse record than the Reds. The Reds lead the Central Division, if you didn't know that. How about that? Baseball. More baseball talk tomorrow, though, I can promise you that. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.